I'm the building inspector there, or one of the building inspectors. And if this makes you feel any better, I'm one of them guys that will go around and look at the amusement devices. And I've done a bunch of them when I'm drunk. And amusement devices are tilt-a-whirls and inflatable devices and things like that. How does that make you feel? You know? So you want to watch the building inspector. I will honestly say that I have not run into any of my cohorts, any of my coworkers, that I would even suspect as having a drinking problem, the kind of drinking problem that I had. A lot of my fellow coworkers are the kind of people that will go to the bar once in a while and maybe have a beer after work and go home. I have not suspected anybody that I've worked with here or. And because the building inspectors get around statewide and they all congregate together, I have not run into anybody at any of these meetings or seminars that impresses me as being the kind of alcoholic that I am. Anyway, I got this job down here when we moved down here, and of course, you know, I was still drinking. I had had some periods of, you know, sobriety, but they were just real short, you know, 15 days, 30 days, whatever. And what happened was, you know, I got down here and I was sitting in the parking lot one day. I'd been at the job maybe 3-4 months. And I had a Sprite bottle full of whiskey and Sprite, half and half. And it was 7:30 in the morning, and I was supposed to be there, or maybe it was 7:45. I was supposed to be in the office in another 5-10 minutes. And I wanted to drink so bad. And I knew that all the trouble that I had had at my previous job, that, you know, I knew I couldn't, but I just wanted to drink so bad. I did not drink, but I kind of made it in my mind that, you know, I'm going to have to do something. I'm going to have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to have to try and do something to quit drinking because I can't. As much as I want to, I cannot quit drinking. I'm not going to go into the Anabuse story too much. I took Anabuse once before and drank on it, got deathly ill. So I went to my doctor down here and I got another prescription for Anabuse, knowing what would happen if I drank. And I got enough to take for 90 days. And I've at least got to get 90 days without a drink behind me and see what happens. And I had enough of that of AA to know that, well, 90 days, I ought to go to 90 meetings. Well, I started going to a lot more than 90 meetings. I was going to 2 meetings a day and 4 and 5 on the weekends in the Richmond area. I know it's a whole lot easier than it is around here to go to meetings every day. And so I took advantage of that. And I went to meetings every day for that 90 days. And in the course of going to all those meetings, you know, you can't help but make some friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And when the Anabuse finally wore off, or, you know, when it was done and I knew that I could drink safely, I asked myself this question, what are you going to do? Now what are you going to do? And this was in 1993. That reminds me, I didn't tell you guys my sobriety date, which is, my sobriety date now is April 29th. 2010, which is coming up here at the end of this month. My original sobriety date when I went in there and started taking the Anabuse and didn't drink that day was January 6th, 1993. So after that, after I was able to drink without the ill effects of Anabuse, I just kept going to meetings, and I didn't drink. You know, I kind of looked at this alcoholism, like a lot of us do when we get here, says, man, I just need to stop drinking, and then everything is going to be all right. If I can just get rid of that alcohol, that's my problem. You know, I did not hear any of the conversation or anything that's written in our big book. That alcohol, you know, our bottles are just a symbol or a symptom. If you said that to me, I didn't understand it. You know, I just did not, it just didn't make sense to me. I was just, you know, adamant that if I could get rid of this alcohol, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be able to manage my life well. that my life is unmanageable. Yeah, I remember thinking that, and it's because of that alcohol. And when that's gone, I'm sure everything's going to straighten right up and everything will be good. That was the case to a point, you know. You know, if you just stop drinking, all of a sudden you can pay your bills. You know, if you're not spending all your money on alcohol, you can get your bills paid. And things seemed to be kind of going along, although I did feel uncomfortable when I would be in meetings and people would say, my sponsor says. I didn't have a sponsor. And so I went out and asked the guy to be my sponsor. And I remember one night sitting at a meeting, but it was a small men's meeting, and the guy said, all right, has everybody got a sponsor? And I didn't have one at that time. And he said, you got one? Yep. You got one? Yep. You got one? Yep. And he pointed at me, said, you got one? I said, yep, I got one. And I didn't have a sponsor, and I surely did not want to, you know, I was determined to do this myself. That I had, you know, like it says in our book, I don't know why I thought I could do it myself, because I had very, you know, I had not really licked any other problems on my own. I don't know what made me think I could just stop drinking. I guess I kind of equated it with the Demerol. If it would just be gone, I'd be okay. And that was not the case. I did, however, get a sponsor, and I can recall, and I got a home group. And for a while I made coffee and stuff, and I stayed sober, as they say, merely by association for about 5 years. And I remember that poor man's my sponsor, and I see him occasionally now, and he's still a good friend of mine. But at one time he says, Bob, you need to start looking at that fourth step. And, you know, things seem to be going all right. You know, I don't know, that seemed kind of drastic. You know, I mean, I can kind of do this in my head. I can see, you know, yeah, I can see I'm a little selfish here and there and some of these other places, but I don't think there's any real need for all that. And I could, you know, I thought I could do steps 1, 2, and 3 and kind of look at, you know, 4 through 9, and then I could probably do 10, 11, and 12. And apparently every once in a while I would talk a good game and people would come up to me and ask me to sponsor them. And I couldn't do it, you know, just for whatever reason, I could not say yes to him. I said, well, maybe you better ask this guy. And I guess maybe I intuitively knew that I didn't really have anything to give them, you know. All I had was that I was just dry, you know. About the only thing I had and I think it's really great advice, and I encourage everybody to don't drink and go to meetings. It's good stuff. But it's not enough, you know. I found that, thankfully, I found that, you know, after working these steps and the home group that I'm involved with now, that we try to, you know, get the three legacies of the AA triangle into play, and that has made for, you know, for me, has made a happy sobriety. Like I said, I stayed dry for those 5 years, and then the county that I work for was going to send me off on a seminar, and I'd gotten a bad resentment at a meeting. I remember there was a woman there that said she was, my life seemed, it was kind of miserable. I was going to a lot of meetings. I wasn't drinking, but nothing was going right. I was resentful and angry. And there was a woman in a meeting who said she just didn't know what she was going to do. She had all this expensive furniture. She had to move it. She had to go here, and her life was just awful. And I was just livid, you know. My life was really awful. I didn't have any expensive furniture. I didn't have this and I didn't have that. I lived without a phone. I didn't have a phone for a while, which is a whole nother story that includes my first wife. You know how some of us drunks like to talk on the phone. She really liked to talk on the phone. You know, and I thought, you know, this ain't working for me. And I guess I made like a real conscious decision that I'm going to drink. And it says in our book that I made that conscious decision, and I'm going to just blot out my intolerable situation the best I can. I was resigned to the fact that I'm going to drink the rest of my life, and I'm just going to be very careful. I'm not going to get a DUI. I'm just going to sit at home and I'm going to drink. And I did that for a good while. Now, I was still married to my first wife, and I tried to do that, but the fighting and everything got, you know, she liked to fight. She's one of them that I'll sit over in the corner and suck up alcohol till I pass out. And she's kind of a, something's got to be going on. We had one hell of a good fight. Police came, and I went away, and that was the last time I saw her alone. I saw her in court a couple times after that, but other than that, I didn't see her again alone. And I had some jail time to do with that. I went to jail, and when I had to go to jail, I had to go in on Friday night. I had to do about 7 weekends. I would make sure that there was a bottle underneath the front seat when I got out, and that there was a pack of cigarettes in there too. You'd think, it just didn't dawn on me. You know, you'd think that that'd be a pretty big red flag, that maybe I ought to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I said, I'm not going back. I remember that after I made that trip, I probably left that out. I got on the airplane and got a drink and started drinking, and I drank that whole week that I was at this seminar and took an exam at the end of it and got my amusement device inspector's license. And I think I was pretty toasted that day. But, when I came back, I said, well, I'm just going to drink on weekends. And I did that for about a month. And then I'm sure some of you have had this experience. I'm just going to drink 2 beers tonight. And I got this 6-pack. And maybe you don't just drink the 2 beers. And the next night you drink 2 real quick. And you say, well, there's 2 left. I might as well drink these 2. And before you know it, you're buying a 12-pack. And then before you know that, and me, I'm not much of a beer drinker. I used to be. But I gravitated towards whiskey, and so before I knew it, I was buying whiskey again. And because I didn't want to make all those trips to the store, I was getting it in the half gallon. And I was, that half gallon was going to last, from Monday through Friday, and by Wednesday night, I was at the store again getting another half gallon. I could not control my drinking, and. So anyway, I'm drinking like this again, and we're separated, and I just made up my mind that after I had started drinking again, some people called me from AA and asked me, Bob, are you still with us? And I said, oh yeah, I'm still with you. Can you speak? Oh no, I'm going to the beach. I'm taking my family to the beach. And then I never heard from anybody again. Then we got separated, and I just got a place and just decided that, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to drink. And that's basically what my life became. I got in some trouble where I'm working now. I went in there one day, toasted. Not that I drank in the morning, but I'd stayed up real late until about 1 o'clock, and I had to be there at 6 that day. So I was still pretty wrecked, and got popped with a random drug and alcohol screen. Drugs were never a problem for me at this point anymore. I didn't have drugs, marijuana or anything like that. I kind of gave that up a long time ago. But the alcohol was a real problem. And at 9 o'clock, when they finally got around to taking my blood alcohol thing, I blew like about a 0.07. And so I imagine I walked in there at 6 o'clock at about 0.09, maybe a 0.1, I don't know. But I was plenty toasted. Got a week off from work for that, and still that wasn't enough. I just got to be more careful. I got popped again and blew a little over a 0.04. And to this day, I'm kind of mystified that they have any kind of tolerance other than zero. You know what I mean? That if you blew a 0.019, you're all right. Go ahead, drive a car. But if you blew a 0.02 or better, then you can't drive, and you're just going to go sit in the office. And if you blew better than a 0.04, they sent you home for a week. And new people get fired for that. And the only reason I didn't get fired is I'd been there forever at that point, about 12 years at that time. And like most of us, I work hard when I'm at work. And so when I blew that .02 something, then I had to go to an IOP. Same thing happened at the IOP. I would take a whiskey bottle or a water bottle full of whiskey with me there. I wouldn't drink all day, but as soon as I left that IOP, I'd hit that on my way home so that I could, oxidize that alcohol so that if I went to work and got popped again with a random drug screen, hopefully I would pass, But I would take that chance. Eventually, my drinking got to where, and believe me, I took some horrible chances and risks, but I guess it just didn't matter. I would go into work and then come home right after I kind of reported into work and have a couple of slugs of whiskey, because if I didn't, I would sweat and shake. I had gotten right back to where I was. It took me about 6, 7, 8 years or something, but I got to that point where I was drinking in the morning again, because if I didn't, I was just falling to pieces. And then have a big old slug of coffee or something and try and hide my breath and go out and meet the public. But my life turned into just nothing but Dr. Bob's deal where he had that phobia about not sleeping. So I needed a drink to go to sleep so I could wake up and make the money to buy the alcohol that I needed to drink to go to sleep so I could get up and go to work, and on and on and on and on. And the tail end of my life, or my drinking life, was that's all I did. I didn't have any extracurricular activities. I didn't go bowling. I didn't go to movies. If I had family events, I had remarried by this time. I'm not going to talk about her. She's a, as the song says, she's a drunkard's dream if I ever did see one. She's a great enabler. She's a wonderful woman, but for me to sit there and be drunk, she didn't care. In fact, if I went with her on some of her her missions, she said, "Well, have you got your bottle with you?" I said, "Yeah, I'm good." Because she knew, she didn't want to have to stop while she was out and have to find the liquor store, But my life just boiled down to sitting in I have a little swivel rocker that I had the remote and the bottle, and that was my life, and getting up and going to work. On the weekends, I might do something like this time of year, I might cut the grass, a chore that, would take about maybe a little over an hour, would take me sometimes 2 or 3 days, About the only thing I could conjure up on Saturdays was to get up and get cleaned up enough so I didn't look like an alcoholic and get to the liquor store so that I could buy, make sure I had enough for Saturday night into Sunday and possibly Monday morning. A lot of times I miscalculated. I'd run out or I wouldn't get to the store on Saturday. On Sunday afternoon, I'd have to go to the food line and get me a bottle of Thunderbird. The one food line that I went to, as I remember, the Thunderbird all had dust on it, Nobody bought it, just me. And there might have been a half a dozen bottles there, and I'd go get this one, maybe 2 weeks go by, and there'd be 5 left. I'd get that one. Time would go by, and I'd get the next one, And finally, there's just one bottle left, and I get that one, and maybe 2, 3 months had gone by, and I'm thinking, how come the store manager doesn't order more Thunderbird? I don't want to be the guy that goes up there and says, "Hey, did you know you're out of Thunderbird?" But that's, that's where I was. Now, what happened to me that got me back here? We had a snowstorm in 2010, and I've got a bad back. And I'm not afraid of the snow. I'm from Michigan. I'm going to go out and shovel snow. I got up at 5 in the morning. I'm out there slinging snow around. And I think I got out and drove down to the store. Nobody on the road, just me. But I'm going down to the store to get, not alcohol, but I've got alcohol, but there isn't anything to eat. So I went down to the store and got something to eat. And got back and was just drinking, did my thing. And then another week went by, we had another snowstorm. I'm out there slinging snow again. That's the one that did me in. My back went out and I was in excruciating pain. That's when I started getting the Percocets again, which I like to take with whiskey. And the steroids, there's a picture of me that at my wife's father's house that was taken a little bit prior to this. I don't know if I was taking the steroids in, but it was taken on a Sunday morning. We're getting ready to come back home. He lives out in Princeton, West Virginia. And I'm drunk. I mean, I can look at that picture and I know if it's Sunday morning, I'm drunk. And I look at that picture, my face is all puffed up and I'm kind of blotchy and red and yellow. And, you know, I just look awful. I look sick, you know. And that's where I was. And that's what happened, you know, when I took the steroids, it got even worse. I don't know how in the world I managed to get the surgery because I had to have a blood test prior to this. And my doctor said, man, your cholesterol is 3,000. I think 2,000 is the limit, you know. Your blood pressure is way out of whack. You know, your red blood cells are enlarged due to prolonged exposure to alcohol. You know, he didn't even bother to ask me, do you drink? You know, how much do you drink? I mean, it was very evident. And how they did the surgery, you know, that I went in there and they give you all those intense anesthesia, you know. But they did, and I had the surgery. And my plan was, I had all the sick leave, and I didn't have to go to work for 4 weeks. My plan was to take, you know, I had a couple bottles of Percocet, a couple half gallons of whiskey, had the chair and the remote, and I'm just going to be high for 4 weeks. You know, never thinking about the therapy, a physical therapy that had to come along following the surgery. That lasted 6 days. Of course, I was taking the Percocets, you know, it says take one or two every 6 hours. And I was taking three or four every 4 to 5, about probably every 4 hours. And so that lasted about 6 days. On the sixth day, I thought I was having heart failure. You know, my heart was beating real bad. For whatever reason, there was no one in the house that day. The house that I lived in always had a lot of people in it. That day it was empty. The leg that I'd been complaining about hurting me from my back was completely numb. I was in the bathroom off of our bedroom, and there was nobody there. I don't know why I took my cell phone in there with me, but I did. And there was blood coming out of me. I don't like to see my own blood anytime. And the blood was coming out of me from a spot where I don't like to see blood come out. And I felt just awful. I said, man, this is it. This is my last day. In fact, that is April 15th, which is tomorrow. It's a tax day. That was the last day I had my last drink. I picked up my white chip on the 29th. And I called the EMS guys, and they come and got me, ran a few bags of water in me, and I was okay. That couple days later, I went in and got my bottle out of the closet, and I didn't drink the rest of that. You know, after I got home that night, I didn't drink, and I didn't drink the next day. And then the following day was a Saturday, and I got that bottle out, and it was just down to the corners, the top corners, that Jim Beam, that square bottle, and I dumped it out. And my wife saw me do it. She kind of looked at me funny. And I said, well, don't get your hopes up. But I'm going to be going to a lot of meetings because I've got to do something. It dawned on me that I was going to repeat that, you know. That I had already repeated my past behavior up to that point. And it dawned on me that, you know, unless I do something, I will do this again. I will repeat this until I don't make it, you know, until I do have that heart attack. I don't know if I was having one or not. I thought I was. I was frightened to death. Thought this is my last day. And that's what happens to a lot of alcoholics. You know, they if they don't crash into a tree or fall down the stairs or whatever, if you can just leave them alone and let them drink like they want to, they'll drink themselves to death. And that's what I was doing. And I burned up a lot of time, and I appreciate the format you sent me, Sam, you know, and I wanted to try and stick to it, and I'm afraid I didn't, because I want to tell you about, you know, that I have worked these steps, and what I have found is these, what has been important to me now is about practicing these principles in all my affairs. The line in the book that says, a more important demonstration of our new principles is required at our place of employment and in our homes, you know. That has been, you know, I just don't come to AA meetings and treat everybody nice here. I have tried to carry this into my workplace. You know, I have to be reminded of that every day. It's always challenging, you know. I try to remember that, you know, I have lived my whole life, you know, very selfishly and very self-centeredly, you know. I've always wanted my way. I've always tried to get my way. And what what the steps ask me to do or what's suggested here is that maybe I ought to think about trying to help other people. And that's not just other alcoholics, you know. It's been explained to me that I need to do that at work, you know. I was listening to a tape on the way up here that one place where I always need a little extra work is with my family at home, my second wife and her and my stepchildren. I find them, you know, they can be, like I said, very challenging, you know, for me to take a kindly and tolerant view of them, you know, and to treat them with kindness and tolerance. I know, though, that when I do, particularly I've had, you know, when I behave that way at work, that the problems at work don't seem to be problems anymore. I appreciate my coworkers. My coworkers seem to appreciate me, you know. It's just that change in attitude that these steps help to bring about. And I realize today, you know, some days I feel like, man, I'm really doing well. I'm doing good. And then some little thing will come along that will throw me into a resentment or I will be angry. And I realize that, you know, I just got more work to do. You know, this is not not as I thought it was, that just getting rid of the alcohol is going to, you know, make it better. That there is a psychic change that needs to occur, you know. And I'm glad to be on that path today. I'm always tickled to death or glad to hear other members say that they've been around here for maybe 15 years and they don't want to stop. They want to keep coming back because their lives are getting better. I have found that to be true in my short time here this time, that my life is getting better. It doesn't mean that life doesn't stop happening. There's still, like I said, there's those challenges and stuff. But I'm just grateful today that having worked the steps, I'm free of that obsession and that compulsion to drink. Doesn't mean it doesn't come back on me. It doesn't mean that I don't have those thoughts. But, you know, I couldn't stay away from the liquor store at all for years and years. I had no idea what was going on. And since I've tried to work these steps to the best of my ability, that has been lifted from me, and I'm just so grateful. And having had that lifted from me, now I can see this other work that these other things that I need to ask God to help me with. You know, it's just a work in progress, and I hope that I will be here, and I hope in the distant future, and this is the distant future, that I hope you will invite me back. And that you will, and then maybe you'll say, Bob has really grown, you know. Because I have noticed that when I have, in my short time back here now, I have seen people come and speak at our group, and then they'll be back 18 months later, and the miracle has happened to them, you know, that they were sober then, they're sober now, and they have grown yet in one other area of their life, you know. And that's the wonderful thing about this fellowship. And this, and the program of recovery. I wish I'd have covered a little more than I did. Like I said, I've been an alcoholic for a long time. You know, I could talk forever. I think, you know, and I wish I'd have covered more about my trip through working the steps, because it's been. you know, it's been enlightening. It just keeps, it keeps every day I see something new and different that, or some area that I'm not doing as well as I thought I was, you know. And if I don't take a drink, then I've got an opportunity to improve that. You know, one of my favorite lines in the book, and two of them, is one of them is, you know, we're that tornado. And we're tearing up everybody's lives, and I finally see that when I do that fourth step. But the other one that really offers me a lot of hope is Bill Wilson talks about his simple talk with his friend in the kitchen. Multiplies itself into an ever-widening circle. Peace on earth and goodwill towards men. And that's what this is about for me today. And thanks for having me. Yeah.